show. So welcome to the panel, RNZ National. Lovely to have your company. Wallace Chevin here, our Manahiri today, Leonie Freeman and Michael Moynihan. This first, you're not going crazy. Auckland's traffic, it's getting worse. A report released today from the AA found morning commuters on the city's southern motorway spent an average of 50 minutes in their cars. That is 7 minutes longer than they were pre-pandemic. And it's not just the motorways, major roads across the city are clogged. The report says the current approach of encouraging more trips by bike, public transport or walking, not cutting it. And there needs to be also significant investment in roads. You heard that right. Significant investment in roads. Collectively, Aucklanders travel more than 16 billion kilometres by vehicle each year. With us to discuss what's going wrong is AA Senior Policy Advisor Sarah Gaird. Sarah, kia ora.
Hi.
That's not insignificant, is it? 7 minutes longer when you're in that car, when you're on the southern, goodness, it takes a long time to get anywhere. What's fueling this? Why are people spending more time in traffic?
Yeah, well, I mean, to a certain extent, we have to speculate a little bit. Our data shows us travel times. Beyond that, we have dug into things a bit. Last year, we saw that Auckland's population declined. So we were scratching our heads a bit. We thought, well, perhaps this would suggest that congestion would level off, but that wasn't the case. When we looked at the population data, what we saw was that while the central and inner parts of Auckland, their population did typically decline, outer parts of Auckland have continued to grow. So we suspect that this is having an impact on congestion.
Okay, so the outer parts, the little bit of decline in the centre, the outer parts growing, people coming in. But hang on, I lived for years in Waterview, disrupted for years, Sarah, by what was known as the transformational piece of architecture called the Waterview Tunnel. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it supposed to fix this?
Well, it certainly bought a lot of time. You'll likely recall, I mean, many Aucklanders will recall when it opened, it had a significant impact on Auckland's congestion.
It did.
Yes, it absolutely did. So, I mean, I'd flip that around and say, imagine the state we'd be in now if we didn't have it.
All right, so our panellists will have some strong views on this as well as our listeners. No more roads, more public transport, please. Now, someone says if they got on buses, it'd be faster. No. So, Sarah, this morning, very busy, I took a 15-kilometre bus ride from Blockhouse Bay to work, about 15 k's. Guess what? I wasn't in gridlock. In fact,
You're very lucky.
Yes. Well, my point is I was reading on the bus. The bus was half full, no gridlock. I saw gridlock outside of the bus. My point being, why don't people listening to this right now, driving home in their car, get on the blimmin' bus?
Well, I think a big part of it comes down to the fact that Auckland has developed around the car. People live all over Auckland, and probably a greater note in this context, they work all over Auckland. So it's not a city where everyone or even the majority of people are heading to the same destination like the CBD. It's therefore very, very difficult to design a public transport system that's going to meet most people's needs.
And but it's got to be designed because that's the future. You can't be adding another two lanes to Mills Road or wherever. The future, Sarah, has got to be, does it not? Better public transit routes. So people can listen to this go, wow, 15 k's from Blockhouse Bay to the CBD, fast.
Yeah, so public
Let Sarah finish and then Leonie.
Okay, sure. Public transport is absolutely going to need to be a big part of the equation going forward, absolutely. But what we're seeing and what Auckland Transport's own forecasts show is that even with all of the planned investment in public transport and in active travel, kilometres travelled on Auckland roads are going to continue to increase. And so we're simply saying that if the roads can't accommodate those trips, greater congestion will be the result.
Leonie.
I was just wondering, Sarah, if you think that part of the issue on the public transport is still that fear from COVID, you know, because obviously with everything we've been through in the last couple of years, a lot of people went away from wanting to be on public transport. Do you still see that as a bit of a reason why people aren't jumping back onto public transport so much?
Yes. So I'd say there'll certainly be people out there who pre-pandemic were taking public transport, and right now they're not. It's not entirely clear to us how many of those people are jumping in their cars instead and how many of them are working from home. As we know, a lot of people who do take public transport work in the CBD. I'd also say that jobs that are in the CBD are probably more likely to be people that get to work from home. So, yeah, we're just not really clear on the cut there. But, yeah, some of this will be people who were formerly taking public transport, aren't right now, and perhaps will again sometime in the not-too-distant future.
Michael.
I have sympathy. I hear what you're saying, Sarah, and I get that your organisation needs to be the advocate for this kind of information. I don't think as a city we can continue not to deal with the issue of the global, of the climate that comes from this amount of cars, the pollution that comes from this amount of cars, without actually taking stock and radically saying, no, we've just got to draw a line. And more roads are not, I think, where I would like to see the investment going when that money, that investment could go into alternatives. It just feels like a tipping point we've got to get over. And uncomfortable though it is, it's actually not the future. Us all being in our cars is not the future. And the fact we are a spread out city is very true, but there are other spread out cities in the world who seem to have got their acts together in this space.
Yeah, so public transport is absolutely going to need to play a greater role in Auckland, absolutely. But meanwhile, all forecasts are showing that we are going to see people continue to hop in their cars, more people, more kilometres, and if that translates into congestion, then that too is going to translate into emissions, so that's not a really good outcome for the environment either.
I get that. Yeah. I get it. I think that whatever we invest has got to be in what the future looks like, not in trying to deal with what we've got now or in technology that we can't really afford to engage in.
What about this as a final note? Because don't people just have to, at some stage, bite the bullet and get on that bike, hop on a bus? Here's an idea. What about a nation, the AA, team up with the government, a nationwide campaign, and it's called 2 days at home, where you have your car in the garage or outside your house 2 days a week, and you have a go at using public transport.
You mean like Carless Days, Wallace?
Like Carless Days, wasn't it, Wallace?
Didn't
they have
that
years ago?
But it's Carless Days for another reason, Sarah.
Yeah.
Well, I think people's needs are really tricky, right? We can't sit here and try and understand exactly what that family in East Auckland or South Auckland, West Auckland, exactly what they need on which day and how they go about doing it. They'll be doing it the way that works best for them, and I think that that's just kind of a fact of life.
Nice to be on the program, Sarah. Kia ora. Really appreciate
Thanks.
It. That is Sarah Gaird there, the AA Senior Policy Advisor. Needless to say, quite a bit of response on that. But, you know, I come back to the fact that I'm on a long bus ride, and I only take the bus because it's easy. The only reason I do it, and I'm not stuck in traffic. I'm on a bus lane, and I go very fast to work, 15 kilometres. I walk to the bus stop. I have a 10-minute walk to work. It seems easy. Do we need to get more people trying to do that, Leonie?
Yeah, I think if it works, I mean, your particular situation, I think, Wallace, works because you come just to work and then you go home again. But I think you have to accept that everybody's got different circumstances between dealing with kids, different places where they're working, different types of appointments. And so I think it's hard to say everybody should do a certain thing without understanding what they're doing.
The panel, RNZ National, 4:18. Lovely to have you company this afternoon. Now, rents are at an all-time high, and Wellington, particularly grim. The national median weekly rent has grown to a record-breaking $580, according to Trade Me's Rental Price Index. The Wellington region has hit an eye-watering get this, $620 a week, a year-on-year increase of 5%. The highest median weekly rent in the region was seen in Porirua at $695, followed by Wellington City at $625, Lower Hutt $645. The local newspaper Dominion Post, now they're calling for the government to extend the income-related rental subsidy to council housing. With us to discuss is spokesperson at Tenants Action Wellington, Anne Campbell. Kia ora, Anne.
Kia ora, Wallace. Thank you for having me on.
Pleasure. You've only recently launched this group. What inspired you to create it?
Well, a variety of things. Obviously, being a renter was kind of top of the list. Like when you're living under a system where you're having to pay a lot of rent and when your house is in bad repair and so on, it's a pretty motivating kind of thing.
I can't get past looking at these rental prices. Porirua, $695. Wellington City, $625. What are you hearing from people paying this sort of money?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's absolutely obscene, you know. And, I mean, a lot of the time it's not actually connected to any real housing costs. I mean, I remember in 2018, the Ardern government announced that they were going to raise student allowances by $15, and you could immediately see landlords posting on social media, oh, good, time to put my prices up. And then rents suddenly, around that time, rents jumped by $50 and everyone was left worse off than before.
So you've got a situation, Anne, that people are paying 60% of their income on rent, 70%, 75% in some extreme cases. It should really be around 30%. That's kind of the international thumbprint there. What do you make of this call for extending rental subsidies to rental housing? The Dominion Post, they did an op-ed on this. Rental subsidy is a simple solution. Your view on that?
Is that for state housing, or are they talking about extending it to private housing as well?
State housing. But you know, yes, what? No, maybe even private housing as well. Any house that needs to be rented out.
Well, I mean, in terms of state housing, I definitely agree, and I really support the IRRS for All campaign that's been running in Wellington. I think they've brought a lot of really valuable attention to the issue. In terms of private housing, my question really is, like, why are we treating those prices as though they're kind of set in stone and everyone else has to accommodate them? Like, it's actually possible for quite a lot of landlords, especially richer property investors, to simply lower their rent.
Leonie, you're from the Property Council.
Yes, so I think there's two issues here, Wallace. The first one is about
why is rent so damn high, Leonie?
Yeah, so rents are about supply and demand. And basically what we've seen is there's been a significant reduction in the number of rental properties available for rent. So a lot of the mum and dad investors have either sold their rental properties or they've gone to alternatives such as Airbnb. And so fundamentally what we need is more supply of housing, because if you've got more supply, then prices can drop. And we've been doing a lot of work in the space in an area called Build to Rent, which is to try and create a bit like in Europe where you've got the big organisations where people can rent for a long time. So we're hoping that there's going to be an announcement at the end of June about that. The second thing about the rent subsidy, though, is that this relates to social housing. And what's a little bit surprising in Wellington is that in other places around the country, like Auckland and Christchurch, the councils with their social housing have partnered with the community housing provider, and then they've been eligible for the income-related rent subsidy, the IRRS, as Anne talked about before. But Wellington's the only, you know, significant council with social housing that hasn't done that. So, you know, there is a solution for Wellington to follow what some of the other councils have done, and then they would be eligible.
All right, and what do you make of that? We hear this Build to Rent announcement coming soon in June. Hopefully it could be significant maybe, but that's still not giving you answers about people who are paying nearly $700 as of this week. Your response to Leonie?
Exactly. I mean, my response to that, when people talk about the supply issue, it is like, how long do renters have to wait to be able to get fair rent?
I agree.
We can't wait for how long it's going to take for that housing to be built. I mean, a lot of government housing projects have been quite slow to go through, and there's, you know, been construction shortages, partly because of COVID. So I think in the meantime, there is a lot that wealthier landlords can do to just, you know, simply act out of the goodness of their heart if they have it, and give their tenants a break.
All right.
Look, I think a lot of landlords do that, but a lot of them have got mortgages to pay. They've had increased costs. There's a whole lot of extra obligations. So the thing that you have, that everyone's got to understand, is that the government's policies, and I'm not saying I don't support them, like Healthy Homes, that's really good. The tightening up of the Residential Tenancies Act and all that sort of stuff, it's all good stuff, but it all adds a significant amount of cost or risk to a landlord. So they've either said, we're going to get out. That's the problem. And they've gone towards alternative options such as Airbnb.
Michael.
And so what would have once been rental stock has now disappeared.
Okay, stay there.
Shall I respond?
Okay, sure.
So we understand that a lot of landlords are facing exorbitant housing costs. I mean, house prices just keep shooting up, like, seemingly without stopping. What we don't understand is why renters are expected to take the fall for this. Because, you know, the people who are responsible for the house prices going up, it's partly from property investors buying up a lot of the stock, but it's also the banks who are helping set this. So I really think that there's an opportunity for mortgage holders to, you know, get themselves together and perhaps take the fight to the banks. Be like, why does the housing have to cost this much? But it's so much easier for them at the moment to simply push those costs onto renters. And that's, you know, it's really not fair.
All right, Leonie, you've had a go. Yeah, let's bring Michael. No, Leonie, you've had a go. Cool. Michael, let's bring you in.
I just find this incredibly complex. I know numbers of landlords who are indeed people with plenty of heart who support their tenants and who are careful with what rents they pay. I think it's the types of solutions, like taking it to the banks or landlords acting out of the kindness of their hearts, is a very difficult thing to, scale, you know, to create across enough to make a big enough difference. That this question comes out of social housing, where I think there should well be formulas that say this is all that somebody with these kinds of incomes could be should be paying. I find it difficult to suggest an answer except to say that in this kind of capitalist, in this kind of an economic environment, it's almost impossible to regulate in a way which is fair to all, because not all landlords are ripping off the tenants, and not all tenants are being are unreasonably put upon. And so I just don't know the answer. Sorry. Long-winded way of saying I can see every side.
Anne? Kia ora. It's lovely to have you on the program, and we'll get you back again, no doubt, because it's such a significant issue. But for now, thank you for being with us. That is Anne Campbell, the spokesperson at Tenants Action Wellington. And meanwhile, yes, the text machine flying off the hooks regarding these two topics. Wallace, how about you just get real? Everyone can't leave their cars. I'm going to stop listening to your program. All right. Wallace, another upper-class white guy in the central isthmus telling folks in South Auckland to get on the bus. Buses don't go where we need to go for jobs. That is across town, round town, etc. Central city white folk, get on a bus or train because you have service from Papakura to anywhere, not central. Forget it. Wallace, do you drop children off at different places? Do you do grocery shopping for a family of five and drop and pick up children after school? Can't do it on the bus, says Anne. Another one here. AA need to get with the program and stop being apologists and lobbyists for the climate criminals, climate catastrophists. This is, they're just not sinking in. So,
goodness, you've They really are getting very agitated this afternoon, Wallace.
It's a panel, and I'll be needing a strong cup of tea after that, but kia ora to all of you for texting in. Thank you.
They're very articulate, though. Well-defined arguments.
Absolutely. Now, we all know the feeling of stereo cranked all the way, our boy racer tyres screeching, or even the crow of a pesky rooster piercing your eardrums and slowly increasing your blood pressure. Is there anything more annoying than a noisy neighbour? A Taranaki homeowner locked in a duel with a local gun club knows it all. Brian Phillips says when he bought his property next to the new Plymouth Pistol Club 3 years ago, the sound of the shots were muffled by a line of pine trees. But just over a year ago, the trees were cut down, and he says the noise is now so bad he cannot go outside with the headphones on. So I just wanted to go around the panel on this one. You can both be the adjudicators. Who's in the right? Who's in the wrong? The local gun club or Brian, who now needs to wear headphones outside?
It's the as I read the article, the issue was that there had been a noise break, a collection of trees that had then been cut down and the noise increased after that. If that is true, and I know the gun club denies that, but if that is true, then it's not. It's their fault. They need to find some way of avoiding that sound going further out.
It's a gun club.
Sorry?
It makes sounds, the sound of a gun firing.
No, yes, I appreciate that. But if it were that, if they cut the trees down and that means the noise is traveling further, there's no break, there's no muffle any longer, then I think they need to try and find some way to muffle the noise. They also, according to the article, were doing, you know, like 6 days a week instead of two. So I don't know how the neighbour could have protected themselves against that. I think the gun club has some responsibility for protecting their neighbours for the noise which is made.
Leonie.
Yeah, well, I thought, well, the gun club's been there for nearly 100 years, so this particular person would have known what they were buying into. And because if you don't like the noise, why would you go and buy a house next to a gun club, even if there was a group of trees? But perhaps what could be done is between the gun club and this particular person, that they could put up a new type of hedge or noise thing or something like that. But I think it's a little bit unfair that. Sorry, what was that, Wallace?
A gibbet wall.
It was no, plywood. Something. Plywood.
Yeah, plywood wall.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that'd be quite funny. But I just think, you know, they have been there for a long time. I just find it weird. It's a bit like I do hear it in the city where people come and buy an apartment and live in the city and then they complain about the nightlife in the city.
Yeah, hey, I think it's critical about whether those trees having been cut down were a muffler. If they were, then that's a different thing than what the owner bought in the first instance.
You're on the panel, RNZ National. Lovely to have you coming. A huge response to all our texts here. Well, I live in Wellington. I went on a shopping trip to Auckland last week. Did Newmarket, Commercial Bay, Britomart, Sylvia Park, all public transport cost me $9. Brilliant. So good.
We live near a train, and I take the train into the city whenever I possibly can.
Right.
It's extraordinarily convenient. It's just outstandingly pleasant.
You're on the panel.